Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is June 16th, 2022, and we are hearing our oral calendar via the Zoom platform. The next case is A220089 MAAC Inc. versus Harley J. Winters, DBA Harley's Dig All. And counsel, just a few remarks before we hear your arguments this morning. I'll just note the time limitations on arguments. Appellant's counsel has 15 minutes. Respondent's counsel has 15 minutes. And then appellant's counsel is entitled to a 5-minute rebuttal argument. Can you both see the clock that is displayed on the screen? And you could just nod if you can see it. Okay, I'm seeing nods. That clock will count down your time. We are making an audio recording this morning of your arguments, and that recording will be available shortly on the court's website. In the interest of the quality of that audio recording, I would just ask you to please use the mute function when you are not presenting your argument. And with that, we are ready to begin. We will first hear from counsel for appellant. Mr. Wolf, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jonathan Wolf. I am here representing Harley Winters, doing business as Harley's Dig All, the appellant. May it please the court and counsel. The basic situation we're dealing with here is that my client, when he was employed by the respondent, bid on a contract available to the public to bid on. He was then terminated from his employment with respondent, and then respondent turned around and sued him and won a judgment on the basis that he had violated a duty of loyalty owed to his employer, which was, if not created, essentially refined into a new form by this court, the Minnesota Court of Appeals, in 1987. So first, I wanted to touch base on some of our trial procedure points. We contest here that it was improper for the district court to rely on deposition testimony for two out of its 15 findings of fact. The district court relied on the deposition of Mr. Winters for these findings, despite the fact that Mr. Winters was there testifying live at trial. These findings were very relevant to the outcome. They concerned Mr. Winters' mental impressions, what he was planning to do, when he was planning to do it. And since this, in this particular case, it's very important when that happened. Had that happened later, after he was no longer working for a respondent, had he decided to bid on this public contract, we wouldn't be here today. So those are important findings in our view. And we believe that the timing is kind of essential here, and that the district court should have relied on live testimony of someone available rather than deposition testimony that seemed to have been introduced for impeachment purposes. Our second point about the costs and disbursements, I believe, has been resolved because my reading of the responsive brief was that the respondent is now saying it is that the respondent has not claimed costs and disbursements and that it is now too late for the respondent to do so. If that is in fact the case, then we have nothing further to argue about there, I don't think. There were not findings made on this issue and live testimony wasn't taken, but if they're not going after costs and disbursements anymore, then we agree that that issue has been resolved. The third issue here is that Mr. Winters went to trial unrepresented. Mr. Winters submitted a request to the district court to allow him more time to find an attorney, and that request was denied. Now, a district court does have great discretion in deciding whether or not to grant a continuance, but district courts and all courts in Minnesota have a special duty to pro se litigants to make reasonable accommodations when they can. And Mr. Winters had good reasons for needing a little more time to find an attorney to represent him, reasons which were disclosed in this letter to the court where he made this request. One of the reasons was that respondent had contacted a number of the local attorneys and essentially conflicted them out of representing Mr. Winters, which I would argue is a pretty good reason for why it's taking you a long time to find an attorney. Obviously, I'm sitting here at the Court of Appeals today representing Mr. Winters, so I think it's evident that had he been given more time, he would have been able to find someone. But with trial approaching, you know, a new attorney is not going to take on a case with a month to prepare, even if he does find one who hasn't been conflicted out. So that delay would not have prejudiced the respondent here. The respondent would be in the same position that we're in now with the judgment if the respondent would have won nonetheless, and a little bit later, whereas it was hugely prejudicial to Mr. Winters to deny this continuance request. Some of the issues we're arguing about here today wouldn't have been issues probably if he would have had an attorney. A pro se litigant is just not going to know the rules of evidence like an attorney would. An attorney would have perhaps been able to address this issue with the findings 8 and 11 at the district court level had he had an attorney at trial. So there was a lot of prejudice to Mr. Winters by not granting this continuance request, and in our view, very little to respondents. And
in terms of the continuance question, how is this case distinguishable from the Hamilton case, where the Court of Appeals found 2 months was that there wasn't an abuse of discretion in denying a continuance where the individual had 2 months to find a new attorney prior to trial?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important to look at the individual facts and circumstances of each given case rather than, setting any particular time period that applies to all cases. In some cases, 2 months might be enough time. In this case, I don't think that would have been enough because of the reasons that Mr. Winters gave. And specifically, I think the issue with having to contact firms outside of his local geographical area because the opposing party had been so zealous in other lawsuits in the past in having other firms in the area represent him. So I think 2 months in some cases may be reasonable. In this case, I think more time was required because basically all the local attorneys were conflicted out. So he had to be going outside of a geographical area. Okay. So moving on here, we do think it was prejudicial to Mr. Winters to not have that continuous request granted. And we think that very much would have affected or could have affected the outcome of the trial. Finally, I get to my point raised in the briefing here that in my view is a little more meaty and requires a little more of the Court of Appeals attention here. And that is whether the court might want to do something with this duty of loyalty to an employer and whether the Court of Appeals really wants that to prevent an employee from bidding on a publicly available contract.
Now, so, Mr. Wolf, if I could jump in on that, because I think I want to make sure I understand your argument. Rehab specialists, it's pretty clear. I'll quote it. It says an employee's duty of loyalty prohibits her from soliciting customers for herself or from otherwise competing with her employer while she is employed. Is that still good law?
Well, Your Honor, I think it is good law. It's never been overturned. I don't think it has to be overturned in order for an outcome favorable to my client to happen here, because I think it is arguably not solicitation to bid on a publicly available contract. Mr. Winters didn't solicit anything. What he did was the SMBSC contract was open up to the public every single year, again and again, on a yearly basis. Anyone in the public knew about it and could have bidded on it. I think you are kind of mangling the definition of the word solicitation if that is soliciting anything to bid on a contract that is literally open to anyone. So I do think it's good law. I do think this case can be decided in a way that favors Mr. Winters that is not overruling Rehab Specialist Inc. But I do think it's worth at least considering whether the Court of Appeals wants to, if not overrule it, refine it a bit. Because I do think that case is a bit outdated. This is a 1987 case. This Ronald Reagan was in the White House, Full Metal Jacket was in the theaters. I was a 2-year-old baby. I mean, this is an old case that has been cited again in unreported cases, but hasn't really been refined or corrected since the late 80s there.
So Mr. Wolf, how would you have us refine it exactly? What do you propose?
Well, Your Honor, I personally, I don't really like this duty of loyalty owed to an employer at all, because an employer doesn't owe employees any duty of loyalty. Since I've been at Rinky Noonan here, we've seen 30 associates come and go. Some of them on to better opportunities, some fired, you know, for reasons that were good. They weren't billing enough, for reasons that they just weren't liked. Why do employees owe this duty that employers don't have to reciprocate? But I also think that the interests served by rehab specialists can be met through things like a non-compete. And the way that opinion is written now, it's essentially forcing every worker in Minnesota into a non-compete that they didn't write and that they don't know about. You know,
well, I mean, it's only while you're an employee, right? It seems like it's already limited to, it says, quote, while she is employed. So that would be different than a non-compete, wouldn't it?
You're right, Your Honor. It is different. I think of it as kind of a non-compete light. Yeah, had Mr. Winters quit and then been on this contract, we wouldn't be here. There would be no dispute that there was no cause of action. He clearly didn't know about that. I don't know why he wouldn't have waited, you know, a month had he known about that. He was surprised. And that was part of the reason he contested this lawsuit so strongly, because it doesn't seem fair to the layperson. It doesn't feel like you should be punished at all, number one, for bidding on a publicly available contract, and number two, that your employer can turn around and sue you for it afterwards and win just because, you know, it happened a month earlier than it could have happened. So, you know, I think if rehab specialist is going to be changed in any way, it would be, I mean, one, because I have to represent my client and his circumstances, I think it should be clear that bidding on a publicly available contract is not what rehab specialists meant by solicitation. So I think that applies to this particular case. In my dream world, where, you know, rehab specialist is changed or overruled in a way, I would say that, you know, something needs to be done about this distinction between, you know, while you're working there and then when you're not working there. I don't know why that makes such a difference. You know, Mr. Winters has all the same knowledge and information the day after he left employment with respondent as he did the day before. What's the reason why it's a tort that he can be sued for if he does the exact same thing, you know, the day before he quits or the day after? You know, that does not seem fair to employees to me. And, you know, I don't know that I have a magic solution or something that is really going to rewrite rehab specialists in a way that that is ideal. But I think the way it's currently written is certainly unideal. It's certainly unideal for Mr. Winters. And it's certainly, you know, it's not ideal for really any of the players here except big employers. It's bad for people starting a new business, obviously, as we saw for Mr. Winters in this case. It's also bad for any of these entities letting public contracts. It's anti-competitive. And I get that the SMBSC is not a government entity like in some of these cases. So we're not talking about wasting taxpayer dollars, although, you know, we could be. There are plenty of government entities that let public contracts. But, you know, I don't...
Excuse me. Could you define what you mean by public contract for us?
Sure, Your Honor. What I mean in the context of this case by public contract is a contract that is open for bids to the public. Any member of the public can bid on it. I'm not defining it in a way where I'm saying that it's a contract for a public entity like a municipality, you know, or a park district. I'm viewing a public contract as a contract that is open for bids to the public. The SMBSC is a quasi, it's not a public entity. It's a private sugar beet cooperative. But in my view, that's, you know, it's kind of a quasi public entity in a way, because it's a group of, you know, agricultural industry people who have kind of banded together, and they want the best price too. They want the best services for the best price they can get. That's why they use the public bidding process. I mean, that's why anyone would use the public bidding process. So that's how I'm defining it in the bounds of this case. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Yes, thank you. Can you also clarify for me, does the record reflect whether the amount that is bid on that contract is known to other bidders? Is that public, or is it just public in the sense that anyone can bid on it?
That question, Your Honor, I do not know if
that's not reflected in the record.
It may be counsel knows. I was obviously not there at the district court level because Mr. Winters was unrepresented. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that's reflected in the record or not. So I just do not know the answer to that one.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question to take us back to the continuance request that was made in this case. Of course, that request, you know, was made by letter, and that was a couple months before, more than a couple months before the trial started. I'm wondering whether Mr. Winters renewed his request for a continuance at the beginning of the trial.
I did not see that he did, Your Honor. I think he should have. You know, obviously, had I been there representing him, he wouldn't have needed to. But that's one of the many things that it would have been useful to have a lawyer for, is knowing that you need to renew and make a record and build a record for an appeal or just for the purpose of the district court decision. So, you know, my knowledge of that is the same as yours, because it's based on a review of the record. And I did not see it in the record. So I don't believe he did. And I wish he would have. And I wish someone would have been there to advise him to do that, Your Honor. I also see that the clock seems to have stopped at 2:15. I don't know if that's just on my end, but I assume I have probably run out of my time, but I'm happy to answer.
You're right. Thank you for pointing that out, because I didn't notice. It did seem like you could just kind of talk forever. So thank you very much. I just want to check with my colleagues to make sure that neither of them have any additional questions. Does Brian, does Cochran, anything else? Okay, thank you for your argument, Mr. Wolf. And now we will hear from counsel for respondents.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Jason Line. I'm the counsel for MAC Incorporated. I believe our argument is pretty straightforward and set forth fairly well in the brief. I mean, the operative facts in this case are that in May and June of 2020, Mr. Winters was doing the things he needed to do to submit a bid to Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative. June 17th, he submitted that bid. He was awarded that contract July 7th. During this entire period, he is continuing to be an employee of my client.
And those aren't really contested in your view?
No, I don't see where that is contested anywhere. Whether Mr. Winters had an attorney or not, I don't see any way those could have been contested. We have deposition testimony. We have Mr. Winters' testimony at the trial that was what he was doing when he submitted his bid, when it was awarded, and when he was ultimately terminated from his employer. This is just uncontested facts. And so that, in our view, very clearly fits into the test of rehabilitation specialists. I mean, rehabilitation specialists gives the district court or the fact finder the freedom to consider different circumstances. I don't think this court needs to overrule that decision. It talks about, based on the entirety of the facts, was it permissible preparation or was it impermissible solicitation? And
the argument, I think, is about the second, the impermissible solicitation, saying that submitting a bid is not the same as soliciting, like going to a customer and knocking on their door, and you know that there may be a distinction between submitting a bid and soliciting. Do you see that distinction at all, or do you think that's just not something, given the language and rehab specialist about otherwise competing, that's not the proper focus?
I don't believe that is the proper focus, Judge Bryant. I mean, the solicitation is going out to someone and seeking their work. There's no difference between that and going out to as an attorney, to go out to someone and saying, hey, I'd like you to come and be my client. And I think we really need to get away from this canard about a public contract. This isn't a public contract. This is a contract that SMBSC goes to people who might be able to do the work for them and says, hey, give us a bid. There is nothing in the record that shows that this was generally advertised to the public or anything like that. This is simply a customer, and they say, give me a bid so that I can see whether or not I should do your work.
Would that change your analysis? Let's assume it was advertised generally and widely, and they're seeking, bids from anywhere and everywhere. Does that change rehab specialist application?
No, it doesn't. Okay. Mr. Winters can bid on that. I mean, if you think about this, if you're an employer, I mean, there's a reason why we have a duty of loyalty. And this idea is that Mr. Winters could go out and bid on every single contract. Well, we never made an argument about use of confidential information, because to us it was so clear this was a violation of the duty of loyalty. But he's going to the same trucking. He's going to try and get trucks from Glacial Plains Cooperative. He's going to the same places to get his water. He's using information that he's gotten as being an employee of MAC to formulate his bid, and then to go and actually make the bid. I mean, I just don't think Minnesota wants to be in a situation where, instead of just looking at the totality of the facts, we got to say, well, was this something that someone was bidding on, or was it not something that someone was bidding on? I mean, this is how you go out and get work. I mean, if it's a contractor, same situation. An employer cannot have his employee going out and trying to steal his work from multiple different people. And that's what could potentially happen if the court were to make this public bid argument. And again, it wasn't a public bid process.
So if I could follow up on the distinction, if there is one between soliciting and submitting a bid, if there's an employer who has a customer, perhaps there's a contract that governs that relationship. And there's a term regarding payment, regarding obligations on both sides, whatnot. And an employer then tries to solicit that same customer to sign a different contract for the same services. That to me would be a clear meet what solicit might be. That's different from submitting a bid that's open to multiple people, right?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, what is the difference between Mr. Winters going to a client of Max and saying, I want to do your work, here's my bid, and a physical therapist
going? Well, I can say that if there's a contract that governs that relationship, then it makes it a little easier to say you're stealing a customer, right? But if that's something that has to be renewed by a bid process that's open to anybody every year, then their customer status is only in place for that year. And then for the next year, they're not a customer. They might be someone else's customer because someone else might win that bid. So in that sense, it is pretty different.
No, I don't think it is, Your Honor. I mean, it's the same situation. So let's say I'm a physical therapist, and I've got a group of clients that I have through the clinic that employs me. And I get somebody better, and they leave. And then while I'm still working for that clinic, I go out and say, hey, John, remember what a great job I did for you? Please come to my new clinic that I'm going to be opening up a month from now. To me, that's the exact same thing. There's not necessarily a continuing relationship between the business, but it's certainly a solicitation of the customers of that business. And again, if Mr. Winters had resigned and gone and bid for this job when he's not an employee, we wouldn't be here today. But that's not what he did. He tried to take this business that he was going to do this job regardless. He was either going to do it on his own or he was going to do it as an employee of MAC. And it's just that he found out that he bid that he got fired because you can't do this. Yes.
If I understand what you just said correctly, you're saying if he had done this, he had left MAC and then submitted a bid, we wouldn't be here today, I think is
correct.
What you said.
Correct.
So as even if he used the information he learned about the pricing that MAC submitted in its bid in formulating his bid, or its costs in formulating his bid, I mean, that's a different legal issue, but you're basically saying that's not the issue. It's the timing that's the issue.
No, I mean, he certainly knew the information about how MAC would formulate its bid. We just never made the argument that that was confidential information because
it
was clear. But in the situation,
so that's why you're saying we wouldn't be here today, not that correct, there wasn't an issue with the use of that information.
Yeah, if an employer had an argument that confidential information was being used even after the employee left the employ, yeah, we would still be here. That would still be a breach of the duty of loyalty. But I mean, this is just so black and white. Under the rehabilitation specialist, this is clearly, he's trying to feather his nest while he's an employee. He's soliciting while he's an employee. It's just, I think it's as slam dunk as you can get in a duty of loyalty case.
What if he had set up a separate LLC and submitted the bid under, as a separate company? As I understand it, Harley's Digall was a DBA.
Yeah. DBA. Yeah. I don't think it makes a difference if he sets up an LLC. It's still him doing it. But I mean, we don't have those facts here. If it's an employee trying to get that work, and I just want to clarify, there was a question, I believe, from Judge Cochran about whether the amount of the bid was public. It was not public. The amount that someone would bid on this contract was not public. And Mr. Winters did not renew his request at trial for more time to get counsel. What happened here was Mr. Winters made his request for additional time to get counsel the morning of the pretrial, I believe. And then that issue was brought up by Judge Van Hahn. Judge Van Hahn wasn't going to give him additional time, but noted that the trial was at that time scheduled for August. I had stated that I didn't have any problem if Mr. Winters had more time to find an attorney. We just wanted to have some kind of deadline for when he could do so, because we didn't want to have a situation where he's got an attorney and, oh, we've got to stop and redo. I felt that would be prejudicial to my client to have him go through the expense of my doing trial preparation. And then all of a sudden, oh, on the morning of trial, found an attorney, we better stop. But he never did find an attorney. And I think as you look through his letter and what he states about trying to find an attorney, I think he could find an attorney. He just didn't find an attorney that supported his argument. Mr. Kleinhusen was his attorney for a fair amount here. And he, for whatever reason, lost confidence in Mr. Kleinhusen. I mean, he tells the court why he lost confidence in Mr. Kleinhusen. But I think, as I say, the facts here are so clear, so clearly a breach of the duty of loyalty to the employer. I think that's part of the reason why he had a hard time finding counsel. And as I say, even if he had, that doesn't change the fundamental facts of what he was doing to prepare to bid this contract, when he bid this contract, and his employment status while he was doing those things, which is just, like I say, slam dunk, a violation of the duty of loyalty as set forth in rehabilitation specialists.
Mr. Lena, from your perspective, is there any difference as to the continuance issue here, given that there was a court trial, then maybe there would be if there had been a jury trial and Mr. Winters had appeared without counsel? Is that a factual distinction that has any significance to you?
I think if it was a jury trial, the court might want to look at it a little more closely. But I think as you look through the transcript of the trial, I think you will see Judge Van Hahn bending over backwards to help Mr. Winters present his case and deal with those issues. So no, I don't think Mr. Winters had any. I don't think he was hindered by that. In the case of a jury trial, that might be different just because of the appearance to the jury. But I don't think in this circumstance where you have a judge who, again, the fact that he is not represented shouldn't enter into the judge's mind in terms of how he decides the case. I don't think it makes any difference, Your Honor.
If I could just briefly, issue regarding cost disbursements, obviously the rule says you have 45 days, I think, for the entry of judgment. And I want to make sure I understand.
We didn't do it in time. We don't get to get it.
All right. Then if I could ask one more thing on a rehabilitation specialist, because we spent a lot of time talking about what is soliciting, what might not be soliciting, but there's that second part that says, or otherwise competing. Do you think that's too broad?
No. I mean, I think soliciting is very clearly you're going out and you're saying, hey, I'm going to go hang up my own shingle. Come to me instead of who you've been going to right now. That's pretty clear. I think that additional is just to kind of be a little more of a catch-all to make it a little broader in case we see a situation where it feels like a breach of duty of loyalty, but maybe it is an active solicitation. But this is solicitation. Again, I think the court in rehabilitation specialists realizes that every case is going to be different. You've got to look at the facts, and it's ultimately going to be a question of what are the facts that are present there. And as the court knows from the cases that have come after rehabilitation specialists, sometimes it's found to be competition, sometimes it's not found to be impermissible solicitation. But again, this is kind of the bright line test. This is doing all the things you're not supposed to do while you're still employed. There is no gray area here. He is doing everything he's not supposed to do. And this idea, well, he didn't know. It's a duty of loyalty. I think employees innately realize I can't go out and try and steal my employer's business. If I want to do that, I got to at least quit first, and I can, as long as I'm not using confidential information, I can go out and do that. But this is not that case.
Okay, your time is up. Thank you very much for your argument. We will now go back to Mr. Wolf. Would you like rebuttal?
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Okay. You will have 5 minutes then. Go ahead.
Thank you. I would like to note that I absolutely do think this otherwise competing language in rehabilitation specialists is too broad. What is the average layperson supposed to take from that? What can they and can't they do? Part of this is when you're looking at things that are applying to just the people, employees, I think the Court of Appeals should look at it as, you know, what is the average person going to be on notice for that they can and can't do? And if what they can't do is otherwise competing, that is so vague and so broad that I don't think that the average employee would essentially get any meaningful guidance out of that part of it, at least. I think it's important to note in this case, when you compare it to what went on in rehabilitation specialists, we're not dealing with a secret customer list. We're not dealing with proprietary information, some kind of trade secret industrial process. There's nothing like that here. There's a bid that was placed on a contract that anyone could put a bid in on. And now I want to note too, there's no evidence that Mr. Winters based his bid amount on what the respondent was doing it for. He didn't go in just a little bit below that or something. Mr. Winters based his bid on the cheapest amount that he thought he could do the job at and do it well, which is exactly how the bidding process is supposed to work. So the entity letting bids can get the best rate to get the
job. Mr. Wolf, I understand you're arguing that this isn't solicitation, but it seems hard to say this isn't otherwise competing. Do you agree that submitting a bid is competing with your employer while you're still employed for that company?
Well, Your Honor, I don't agree if it's a publicly available bid, because SMBSC didn't have to accept new bids every single year like it did. It did that because it didn't consider it to be a customer of respondent. It was contracting for a job to get the job done. It didn't care who did the job. So I suppose you could define competing in a way that would encompass that. You could define it in a way that didn't encompass that. I don't think it should be defined in a way that encompasses that. That is way too broad. Why are we going out of our way to protect these big businesses at the expense of, you know, people starting a new business, small business owners? So I guess there could be a way to define otherwise competing to include that. I don't think it should. And I also don't think that If SMBSC doesn't consider itself a customer respondent, why are we letting respondent define it that way and then sue Mr. Winters for stealing its customer when SMBSC itself clearly did not consider itself to be a customer of respondent? It didn't feel like it had any loyalty to stay there with respondent. It wanted to go with whoever could do the job, do it well, do it as inexpensively as possible. And by the way, I don't think anything should be based on how widely the bid letter advertises the availability of the contract. Clearly, they were open to taking bids elsewhere, and clearly people knew about it. They weren't making this a closed process where they would only accept bids from respondent every year, which they could have done. They could have done that if they'd wanted to. They didn't do it. So if Mr. Winters can do the job better and cheaper, I don't see why he shouldn't get the contract. I don't see why he should have to, you know, quit his job and submit that bid the next day and take on this huge risk. He's already taking on a risk. Obviously, he was fired for putting in this bid, and that's kind of punishment enough. Now we're obviously not here saying, you know, Mac couldn't fire him for doing this. They can and they did. But why should he also be able to be sued for this? It's just all these protections for employers, for big businesses, and basically punishing somebody who's going to start a new business, who didn't take anything from his employer to do that, didn't steal any of his employer's customers. This wasn't a customer's employer, didn't learn anything new that he needed to know to start this business from his employer. He already got punished for this by being fired. I don't see why he also should be sued over it. And I don't think it sets a good precedent for future people who are going to go out and potentially start a new business to say, well, if we're going to define otherwise competing broadly, vaguely, however we want in any given case, and, you know, maybe you'll get sued by your employer. So, you know, that's stifling to free enterprise. I just think that's kind of a poor precedent to set. So unless there are any further questions from the panel, I will rest there. Thank you very much.
Thank you both for your helpful arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court, and we will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. This ends our oral calendar for the morning, and the court will now convene to consider our non-oral cases. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.